On this 26th day of July 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, text number 12. Ishtan Bhoga Nivodeva.
Ishtan Bhoga Nivodeva.
Dasyante Yajna Bhavita.
Dasyante Yajna Bhavita.
Tayadattana pradayabhyo yo bhunkte stena eva saha. In charge of various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna or sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. Purport. The demigods are authorized supplying agents on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. Therefore, they must be satisfied by the performance of prescribed yajnas. In the Vedas, there are different kinds of yajnas prescribed for different kinds of demigods. But all are ultimately offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For one who cannot understand what the Personality of Godhead is, sacrifice to the demigods is recommended. According to the different material qualities of the persons concerned, different types of yajnas are recommended in the Vedas. Worship of different demigods is also on the same basis, namely, according to different qualities. For example, the meat-eaters are recommended to worship the goddess Kali, the ghastly form of material nature. And before the goddess, the sacrifice of animals is recommended. But for those who are in the mode of goodness, the transcendental worship of Vishnu is recommended. But ultimately, all yajnas are meant for gradual promotion to the transcendental position. For ordinary men, at least 5 yajnas, known as Pancha Mahayajna, are necessary. One should know, however, that all the necessities of life that the human society requires are supplied by the demigod agents of the Lord. No one can manufacture anything. Take, for example, all the eatables of human society. These eatables include grains, fruits, vegetables, milk, sugar, etc., for the persons in the mode of goodness, and also eatables for the non-vegetarians, like meats, none of which can be manufactured by men. Then again, take, for example, heat, light, water, air, etc., which are also necessities of life. None of them can be manufactured by the human society. Without the Supreme Lord, there can be no profuse sunlight, moonlight, rainfall, breeze, etc., without which no one can live. Obviously, our life is dependent on supplies from the Lord. Even for our manufacturing enterprises, we require so many raw materials like metal, sulfur, mercury, manganese, and so many essentials, all of which are supplied by the agents of the Lord, with the purpose that we should make proper use of them to keep ourselves fit and healthy for the purpose of self-realization, leading to the ultimate goal of life, namely, liberation from the material struggle for existence. This aim of life is attained by performance of yajnas. If we forget the purpose of human life and simply take supplies from the agents of the Lord for sense gratification and become more and more entangled in material existence, which is not the purpose of creation, certainly we become thieves, and therefore we are punished by the laws of material nature. A society of thieves can never be happy because they have no aim in life. The gross materialist thieves have no ultimate goal of life. They are simply directed to sense gratification, nor do they have knowledge of how to perform yajnas. Lord Chaitanya, however, inaugurated the easiest performance of yajna, namely the Sankirtan yajna, which can be performed by anyone in the world who accepts the principles of Krishna consciousness. Om jnana timurandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshu unmilatamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this section of the Bhagavad Gita deals with the principles of yajna. We have yajna, we have dharma, we have yoga. All of these are related. The word yajna means sacrifice. You're sacrificing something for a higher good. Here, the very basic principle of yajna is mentioned in relation to the devas, or the higher authorities. Without recognizing our position as dependents on these higher authorities, then we become more or less like animals. As Srila Prabhupada talks about in this purport, without recognizing that principle of higher authority and that we have to perform yajna in order to get the necessities of life, then we simply try to rely on our own intelligence in order to exploit nature, and in this way get the necessities. The necessities are still being given by higher powers, but we're forgetting that. And the result of that is more or less what you see today. With the rise of technology and that kind of knowledge, there doesn't seem to be a need. It seems to be outmoded and mythological that these are being supplied by higher powers. But we see the result of this is that there's the expansion of greed. Unrestricted material desire leads to greed, and it's never satisfied. So you have people today who have way, way, way more than they possibly could need, but they're not satisfied. Millions of dollars, billions of dollars, corporations who are moving billions of dollars around. And that power, sometimes I give this analogy. If you can imagine now, each of you, if you had $1 billion at your command, how that would change your mentality. What do I do with it? You know, I can control so much of this world, right? Suddenly you become like a god practically among people, right? You look at the masses, you know, in the street, they have barely enough to live and you're having $1 billion. You know, you can start industries, you can do so much with that. You know, it gives you a tremendous sense of power. This is the meaning of the word Aishwarya. In Sanskrit, the word for wealth is Aishwarya. It comes from the word Ishvara. Ishvara means controller. Because when you have wealth, you have control. It's a kind of energy, right? You can do so much with that. If you have nothing, no money, you can hardly do anything. So that's a kind of intoxicant, just having that power, having that energy. And you forget all about any higher powers. You declare that, you know, you say, well, that's, who cares about that? That's some old book, you know. But factually, what do we see happening in the world today? This whole, understanding by those who are a little bit saner that we're wrecking the ecosystem, you know, the global warming. It's a perfect, you know, it's a perfect result. Burning these fossil fuels. You know, too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. You know, we can argue back and forth to what degree, but it's obviously something's going on. I can tell by my own experience being here in San Diego that the climate has definitely changed. I just was in Winnipeg, Canada. You know, that's like 500 miles north It's north of North Dakota. You know, it's generally cold there. You know, even in July, it's very mild, 60 degrees, 70 degrees max, you know. It was in the 90s. For days on end, very unusual weather, even for Winnipeg. The huge, heat wave we had, all those floods, remember, a few weeks before. You know, just think about it. There's all these extreme weather things going on. So, but people don't want to admit, they don't want to connect this. Oh, yeah, this is something that we're doing. This is a result, you know, anthropomorphic, or what do they call it? Anthropocentric, caused by human beings, what the exact term is. So, because that means that we have to do something different. That means that the society as it's now constituted has to take a look at itself and change. And the purpose of yajna is to recognize our place in the larger scheme of things and to recognize our dependence on the higher powers. Now, in other places, Krishna talks about how we don't have to worship the demigods. It's foolish to worship the demigods, provided that you worship Krishna. In the ninth verse here, he says, yagyartart kamano nyatra loko yam karma bandana, that activities should be performed for the sake of yajna. And it's clear from the purport here that yajna here means Vishnu. That if you don't work for the pleasure of Vishnu and sacrifice, then whatever you do is going to bind you. It's going to bind you to this world, birth and death. Because you'll be working for the satisfaction of your own senses. Or your the senses of your immediate family or clan or nation or whatever it may be. And that just keeps you bound to this world. So at least if we can't recognize that, we have to recognize the power of the demigods. Just like you have to pay your taxes. You know, the sane person understands, okay, there's a government. If I don't pay the taxes, they're going to come after me. Right? So you pay the taxes, and, you know, supposedly things are done. You know that there's all kinds of, those taxes are often used for nefarious purposes. But some things are good. There's the police, there's the fire, there's a water system, the roads are repaired. You know? I'm driving a little bit, I notice, okay, they repair the roads after some time, you know? You know? But, so you recognize that government. So why not the larger government? You know? Obviously, the necessities of life, the air, the water, the sunlight, these are being supplied to us. We can't create them. In the next couple of verses, text 14, Krishna will make a very simple argument. You want to eat? Right? Okay. Well, you depend on the rain. No rain? Then everything dries up. Where does the rain come from? We don't control it. Arjuna Sambhava, Yajnyad Bhavati Parjanyo. He says that that rain is being produced from sacrifice. Now, how is it that in America it rains so much and nobody's performing sacrifice? Because the people who were able to come here and live here in a previous life was pious. They recognized the Supreme. Now, in this environment, maybe many of them forgot. But that pious credit, that good karma, is rapidly being spent. America itself is like this big Titanic, you know, huge economy that's listing. As I speak, they're talking about, you know, this debt ceiling not raised and the whole thing going off a cliff. And how much can you continue with debt? It's $14.3 trillion. That's a lot of money. Just the interest is like $250 billion a year. It's ridiculous. So speaking of debt, it's perfectly applicable here. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam describes exactly what Krishna is talking about. Devarshi bhutaptanrinam patrinam nakinkaro nayam rinicharaja. In this verse, it described all of the entities that we are indebted to just by living in this world. So the first is the devas, as he mentions here. They provide the sun and they provide the air, etc. But also the rishis. Rishis in general means those in knowledge who can teach us what we have to know, even on the material plane. We've had so many teachers, our parents, or teachers in school, you know, who give us knowledge by which you can read, or by which you can live. Just thinking of reading. Suppose no one taught us how to read. Can you be illiterate in this world and, you know, succeed? So you're indebted. You're indebted. You owe, you know. So Devarshi, Bhutapta, other beings, all kinds of people and others help us to live. And forefathers, you know, ancestors. So you come into this world, you're a debtor. And if you don't acknowledge the debt and try to repay them with various sacrifices, then you're condemned, you know, and then you have a bad destiny. So the purpose of the point of this verse spoken by Narada Muni is that we are originally debtors, but if we serve Krishna with our sarvatmana, with our body, mind, senses, in other words, if we serve Krishna, the Supreme Lord, of all the subordinate demigods and all others, with our full, then all the debts are forgiven. Then you have one debt. Then your debt is only just like consolidating your credit card debt, right? If they're calling you, you're going nuts. Okay, then you go to some debt advisor. I've never been in debt, so I don't know, but I know you can do that. And then you can just make one payment each month and somehow get through it, right? So the point of that is that. The idea is there's a huge hierarchy, which we cannot see. We cannot see with our regular eyes. But we learn from the Shastra, we understand by logic. And at the top of that government, of that bureaucracy, if you will, of universal, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, Parameshwara. Now, if we are serving Him, and then everything else is taken care of. That's the whole purpose of the Govardhan Leela. This temple is known as New Govardhan, in memory of that Leela. So the Govardhan Leela is commemorated. In Four Corners, you see Krishna lifting the hill, right? I don't know how much you know, most of you know the pastime, but I'll tell it real quickly. So Krishna in Vrindavan, he appeared to be like an ordinary boy, although he did some very extraordinary things, and after a while they understood that he wasn't ordinary. But still, he was born into took the place in a rural community centered on cow protection. You know, so the agriculture. So agriculture depends on the rain. They know that the rain is essential. So every year they would perform what they call the Indra Jagya, a sacrifice to Lord Indra. According to the Vedas, certain mantras are chanted. They sacrifice so much grain, so many things. And in this way, they propitiate Indra, and the rain comes, not too much, not too little, at the right time. And this way, agriculture flourishes. So just when they were preparing the Indra Jagya, they collected all of the paraphernalia, Krishna appears on the scene. He's only 7 years old. So he asks his father, what's going on here? So his father, just imagine a little child coming up to his father when he's trying to pay his taxes. He's writing, filling out the forms. And the child, oh, this is not for you. You can't understand. So it's like that, they say. So Krishna insists, now you should tell me, you know, I'm part of the community. So he explains the Indra Jagya. So Krishna then starts speaking philosophy. And he starts speaking like atheist philosophy. It's called Kama Mimamsa. He's saying, well, you know, who's Indra? Everything is dependent on our karma. There's this philosophy, that's Kama Mimamsa. That karma is a force. You do good now and you'll reap the benefits. So this is, everyone's pious here. You know, the rains will come. What is Indra? You know, the rains are falling on the rocks and they're falling on the ocean. Why? You know? In other words, it's not very logical. But if there is a god, or if there is a demigod, such as Indra, then he's bound by your karma. Just like if you go to a clerk in the office to pay your taxes, you don't have to please them. They have a function to perform. If you come with your check and you fill out your form, they have to accept it and you're in. They're just a functionary. So similarly, Indra's a functionary. If you perform the good karma, then he has to, you know, put down the rain at the right time, not too much, not too little. You know? So forget about Indra. You don't need to worry about Indra. But what would please me, O Father, if you take this very paraphernalia that you've collected and worship Govardhan Hill and the cows and the Brahmins, that would really be nice. And since Indra, you know, Krishna was the charmer of Vrindavan, they all loved him. Eventually they agreed. You know, 7-year-old boy, he convinced everyone not to pay their taxes, just to go around his hill. So they performed the Indra Jagya, the Govardhan Puja, and they went around the hill, and Krishna became the hill, he ate all of the offerings, it's a whole pastime. And everyone goes back and they're blissed out, you know, because they pleased Krishna, they were chanting the holy name, whatever, you know, fine. But Indra wasn't pleased. You know, he lost it. Now, why does Indra continually lose it? Meaning that he loses his intelligence. After all, he has a very responsible post, right? He's a devotee of Krishna. He runs the heavens and the heavenly planets, rain. But periodically, he is his intelligence is covered by his pride and his power. And so he thought that this is just a foolish young boy, and he convinced these farmers not to perform the jagya. So he thought he would teach him a lesson. And he created this terrific storm, like unheard of. Hail and rain and lightning and wind without cessation, on and on and on, until Vrindavan was becoming flooded. The residents were panicky. So what do? They call out to Krishna. They don't call the FEMA, Federal Emergency Man. You know. They don't put the sandbags. They call out to Krishna because he's their protector. And he protects them by lifting the hill, you know, which is completely... the whole community was saved. They came under the hill and was saved. And Indra was humbled, you see. So there's many lessons in there, many things going on at once. The first lesson is you don't have to worship the demigods if you please Krishna. The second thing is that Krishna, he's our ultimate protector, you see. And the third thing was that on the level of relationship, Krishna now is showing his glory to the whole of residents at once. So they're all appreciating him. Wonderful Krishna. There's a chapter after that. So there's a lot of things happening. And then Indra also, he offers his prayers, very nice prayers in a secluded place, and everything turns out okay. But this is the principle of yajna. So in this purport, Prabhupada, whenever yajna comes up, Prabhupada talks about the ultimate principle of yajna. In this age, you know, nobody, you know, we're not going to get it together before. Even if we wanted to, we don't have the wherewithal and the understanding or the trained Brahmins, you know, to chant the mantras exactly at the right time, at the right, exactly the right place, positioned just right. You know, you have to have the sacrifice altar in the right angle, otherwise it doesn't work. You know, vastu, the whole thing. Who knows all that today? None of us are going to do that. So but we have to perform yajna. If we don't perform yajna, we'll be condemned. So Lord Chaitanya, Krishna has come as Lord Chaitanya to give us the most practical yajna, which takes us far beyond, you know, just maintaining in this world. And that's called the Sankirtan yajna. With the Sankirtan yajna, which means the congregational chanting of the holy name, all the other principles of yajna are satisfied. If everyone, you know, if we had, instead of playing football in this stupid stadium, Qualcomm, they would have big kirtan processions. If instead of going down at, you know, Fifth Avenue in the gas lamp district to eat some horrible thing and go to a movie, whatever they do, you know, they were going down there and having a big Sankirtan festival every Friday or every night, then everything would fall into place, you know. The economic crisis would be over, people would feel better, the healthcare crisis. The society would be healed by that. Just on an individual level, we can feel, if you take part in this Sankirtan yajna, you take the chanting of Hare Krishna seriously, your own life becomes healed. You know, so many troubles, so many anxieties are miraculously, if you will, solved by the process of bhakti yoga, you know, when you take it seriously. So similarly, the whole world can become like Vaikuntha. If the Sankirtan yajna, if the process of bhakti centering on Sankirtan yajna is taken seriously. Because it directly you know, pleases Krishna in the most practical way. It really, Sankirtan yajna is not meant for anything material. It's not even meant for getting liberation. It's meant for attaining the great treasure and jewel of existence, which is pure love for the Supreme Lord. You know, that, and that love evokes the greatest mercy. It's just like in our own life, you know, a mother and child. This is the purest expression of love that we have. Prabhupada mentioned many times. So the mother's love is like an actual substance that the child eats and is sustained by, even more important than the, you know, food it gets. The milk is flowing, that's another thing. Without that, the child doesn't grow, it becomes a cipher. They had these experiences in Romania. I don't know if you ever read that, when they got independence, or they kicked out the communists. Eventually people went in there, and this crazy guy who was running the place said, oh, we don't have enough people, therefore we have to have more and more babies. But they couldn't sustain the babies, so many babies were orphaned, and they put them in like these warehouses, and they were growing up, and you know, they had food and they had warmth, but they had no love, and they just were all emotionally completely wrecked. You know, these kids never developed properly. So that love is what evokes the response, the child's response, or in any situation. You know, it moves people to do things that, you know, sacrifice their whole life for that. So similarly, a little love for Krishna, a little affection, a little devotion, and he responds like anything. And that's really all he responds to. He doesn't need our elaborate offerings. He doesn't need anything else, you know. But all of this has been arranged so that we can somehow give something and evoke in our own hearts the natural love that's already there. This is the whole purpose. And chanting the holy name, especially Hare Krishna, in the proper way, avoiding the offenses and his good association, evokes that. That's the gift of the Hare Krishna mantra. And everything else follows from that. At least a little drop of that affection just brings so much pleasure, real pleasure to the soul. Completely eradicates, you know, desire for so much material sense gratification, which never satisfies. Never satisfies. You can see it out there. These billionaires and millionaires, they're not happy. You know? It doesn't buy happiness. I remember in India, you know, there was a story in the last few months about some guy. He built the most ostentatious, biggest dwelling there's ever been in middle of Bombay. He spent how many billion? $20 billion on a house, you know, a dwelling, the most ugly building I've seen. But it was like 40 stories, 50 stories high to live in with him and his family. You know? It's insane. And so he's living there. So is he happy? I mean, come on. You know, just chant Hare Krishna, serve Krishna, you know, absorb your mind in Krishna's Leela. That's obviously the source of happiness. It's right here in the Bhagavad Gita. You see, as we proceed, you know, bayasparshesu asaktatma vindadyatmani yat sukham sabrahma yama yuktana sukham akshayam ashnute. A simple, you know, one statement from Bhagavad Gita. He says that those who are wise, they don't try for this sensual happiness, which is very temporary and frustrating. It brings misery and entanglement in this world. But they learn how to contact the Brahman within. Vindajatmani atmani yatsukam. They're enjoying within this Brahma. And Brahmasukha is unbreakable. So that Brahmasukha is nothing but Krishna consciousness. It's Krishna prema, you know, ultimately. That's where the happiness is. And it's the happiness of the soul contacting the Lord. It's not dependent on the externals. Ultimately, nothing can break that if you can experience that. So, but this principle of jagya is important. In the process of devotional service, you can almost define everything as jagya. You're sacrificing, say, your own comfort, you know, for the pleasure of Krishna. Right? Getting up early in the morning, taking a cold shower, you know, not pursuing your own interests, sacrifice. It's sacrifice. But the benefit is practically immediate. You can feel it. You know? So, sacrifice is important to understand because otherwise, without that sense of sacrifice, we tend to aggrandize. This is mine for my pleasure, you see. And that's directly opposite to the principle of devotion. It's for Krishna's pleasure, for the devotee's pleasure, for the other. And you find yourself, you know, happy somehow, serving out prasadam. You're serving out enough prasadam, you're not even hungry anymore. You're so blissful eating everyone else's prasadam. Have you ever tried it? It's such a... Just like we sing every morning. You know, what do we sing? It's the important... Chatur Vadhashi Bhagavat Prasada Svadvana Triptan Hari Bhakta Sangan Kritvaiva Triptam Bhagavat Bhajata Sadaiva. So what does that mean? So the spiritual master, right, the guru, he's very happy not to take prasadam, but to see that the devotees are pleased in taking the prasadam, different kinds of prasadam. That brings him satisfaction. So that's devotion, you know, to see that the devotees are happy. And that pleases Krishna more than anything, to take care of the devotees, to somehow make facility. That's why like a temple like this, you know, created, you know, fixed up, maintained at great effort. It's a tremendous service. It provides an ashram, provides a place where people can come and glorify Krishna, become Krishna conscious. So those who are making that effort to do that, they're very dear to Krishna. So anyway, that's this verse, text 12. Any comments or questions on text 12? I'll read the verse. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yoga or sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. Thieves can never be happy because you're always looking over your shoulder. Deep down inside, you know you're a thief and you know and that you don't deserve this. And that's the society we live in. Okay, going on. Yagishishtashe naksanto Muchyante sarvakil visayi Bunjate te tvagam bhapa Yepachant yatma karanat The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. Purport. The devotees of the Supreme Lord, or the persons who are in Krishna consciousness, are called santas, and they are always in love with the Lord, as it is described in the Brahma Samhita 5.38. Premanjanat tudita bhakti vilochanena santas sadaiva vridiyeshu vilokayanti. The santas, being always in a compact of love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, the giver of all pleasures, or Mukunda, the giver of liberation, or Krishna, the all-attractive person, cannot accept anything without first offering it to the Supreme Person. Therefore, such devotees always perform yajnas in different modes of devotional service, such as shravanam, kirtanam, smadhanam, archanam, etc. And these performances of yajnas keep them always aloof from all kinds of contamination of sinful association in the material world. Others who prepare food for self or sense gratification are not only thieves, but also the eaters of all kinds of sins. How can a person be happy if he is both a thief and sinful? It is not possible. Therefore, in order for people to become happy in all respects, they must be taught to perform the easy process of Sankirtan Jagya in full Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there can be no peace or happiness in the world. So this is a verse about prasadam. Shishta means remnants. You know, a shishta is remnants. So remnants of sacrifice. So it's kind of a sacrifice, you know, cooking in the kitchen, preparing prasadam, you know, boga for Krishna to enjoy. So you're sacrificing. You're sacrificing your time, you know, the boga is given up. And then we only take the remnants. We're taking Krishna's remnants. So ideally, you're only thinking of Krishna's pleasure. You know, Krishna will enjoy this. I'll make this very nice, you know, for Krishna's pleasure. And of course, we know that Krishna is so kind that he leaves it, you know, he eats it by looking at it. This is another verse in the Brahma Samhita, Prabhupada quote, Angana yasa sakalendari vrittimanti, that for Krishna, all of the senses can perform the functions of the other senses. That's part of his spiritual body, his potency. And so he sees, he looks, and he sees the devotion there, which is really what he's hungry after. And he leaves it, and we take the prasadam. But it's changed. You know, if the consciousness is good all along the way, then that food has been changed. And it has a different effect. It's not only nourishing physically, but also spiritually. It brings us closer to Krishna. Now, on a personal level, you can see that this is an act of love. Just like Rupa Goswami says, Bhunkte bojayate chaiva. That if you like somebody, invite them over to your house, or you find out what do they like to eat. You know, okay, pizza? All right, I'll make pizza. You know, or whatever. Order out, but whatever. You try to please them, right? So you give food to someone. Wife cooks for the husband. You know, husband provides for the wife. You know, in this way, it's an exchange of love. It's a very important thing. So similarly, it can be there for Krishna. And when you take the remnants, then this is a way of eating spiritually. Otherwise, if you cook only for yourself, then you're eating sin. This is one of the basic ways in which you stay bound up in this world. Even vegetarian food, if you're just cooking for yourself, it's sinful. It's not as sinful as if you're murdering the poor animals, but still it's sinful because it's selfish. So, now, the word santa, you know, obviously means saint. Santa Rosa, San Diego, it's the same word. And Prabhupada quotes this, it's the same word in English and Sanskrit. So he quotes his Premanjana because Santa is in there. So the devotees are in a compact of love, and therefore they, you know, offer Krishna everything that they have in their food. Now in this purport, Prabhupada brings in all the processes of bhakti as part of sacrifices. Shravanam, kirtanam, smadhanam, archanam. So those are processes of devotional service. Hearing, chanting, remembering, serving. So in one sense, everything requires a sacrifice of some sort. Sacrifice of time, attention. You could be doing so many other things, but you're here. You know, you're listening to the Bhagavad Gita. Or you could be doing so many things, you're chanting Hare Krishna. You know, so that's a sacrifice. And it can be seen as such. We should understand it as such. Oh, I'm doing this for Krishna's pleasure. You see. And in that mood, if you chant Hare Krishna, then you really get the benefit. The hard part is your attention. Sacrificing your attention. So many things are grabbing attention. but focusing on Krishna, Krishna's name, the sound. That's also a sacrifice. So in one sense, you can see everything in terms of sacrifice. And here again, Prabhupada mentions Sankirtan Jagya. That's, if you're intelligent, you'll do that Jagya. You know, this is in the 11th canto. Krishna Varnam Twisha Krishnam Sangopangasta Parshanam Yagyar Sankirtana Praya Yajantihi Sumedasa. Again, the word Jagya is used. So this is a verse describing the advent of the Yuga Avatar, the incarnation for the age. None other than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it says, Krishna Varnam. In this case, we understand from Acharyas, this means that he's chanting the syllables Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Varna is one of the meanings of Krishna. So he's always chanting Krishna's name. And his Twisha, his complexion, is Akrishnam, blackish. Non-blackish, excuse me, Akrishnam. In other words, golden. This is a Bhagavatam verse about Lord Chaitanya. And he appears with his Anga, Upa Angas, as Astras and as Parshadas. So the Angas are the actual limbs, means his very close associates, like Nityananda and Advaita and others, you know. And his Upa Angas are those who are a little bit less remote, who you read about them in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So many associates, you know. But they still help him in his pastime. And his weapons, the holy names, are the weapons. Now, Krishna has the chakra, Rama has the bow. There's so many other weapons. Lord Nrisimha has so many weapons, even his nails and everything, and which they kill the demons. Right? Krishna's always killing demons with that chakra. But Lord Chaitanya doesn't have any weapons like that. His hands are open. You see him on the altar. So where is his weapons? The holy name. The holy name doesn't kill you. It kills the demonic propensity within you. Because in this age, all of us are part saint, part demon. You know, we have our selfish, you know, demonic qualities that we're fighting against. You know, many people don't fight; they lose the battle. But as devotees, you know, we're trying to be saintly. So the holy name eradicates the demonic qualities: the selfishness, the greed, the lust, the anger, the illusion, envy. You know, those diminish if you're doing this process nicely. And what grows are the saintly qualities: humility, you know, devotion, purity, mercy, compassion, all these things. So therefore he says, those are the astras, the weapons, and those parshadas. The parshadas are the really intimate associates like Ramananda Roy and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Swoop Damodar, you know, in Puri. So these are all associates of Lord Chaitanya. Then, Parshadai, Yajna Sankirtana Praya Yajantihi Sumedasa, that those who are Sumedasa, intelligent in this age, will worship him mostly, not exclusively, but mostly by the process of Sankirtan. Sankirtana Praya means for the most part. Because we also do deity worship, we do so many other things, but Sankirtan is the main thing. So you have to be a little bit intelligent. We're trying to become intelligent, you know. Because what are the benefits? First of all, it's so easy. In previous ages, like I mentioned, you have to have the right Brahmins, you have to, you know, mountains of grain and tons of ghee, you know. Where can you get that? You can't. Very difficult. And you have to perform in just the right way. If you mispronounce one syllable, oh, the whole thing is ruined. They would have, you know, referees. You'd have a whole bunch of chanters, you know, Brahmins who really know how to chant. I just fake it. They had to chant mantras, you know. And the others were listening to them. If they make a mistake, wait, 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 you made a mistake. Redo it, you know. You can imagine. You know, and the hours of chant. We can't do that. So, in this age, he's made it very easy. You know, Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalu. Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gataranyata. If you want to achieve the supreme goal of life in this age, when dissension and chaos abound, there is no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way that can ever be found. But to chant Krishna's name, but to chant Krishna's name, but to chant Krishna's name with a stout-hearted vow. And to pray, O Lord Krishna, O friend of the poor, let my head ever unto your lotus feet bow. So this last part I put in there, it's extra, but it incorporates the essential verse, Trinadapi Sunichena. To really chant Hare Krishna, you have to feel yourself helpless. Because this Hare Krishna mantra is simply calling out to Krishna. You know, so many other mantras, they're not like their obeisances, whatever. But this Hare Krishna mantra is a call. Just like a little baby calling to his mother, Prabhupada says, helplessly. So in order that you have to feel yourself as we really are, which is more, you know, humble than a blade of grass. We're so fragile. What do we really have? Our bodies are so fragile, you know. Train how to be total, and you have to be tolerant. You have to be tolerant in this world, because it's a world full of chaos and dualities. So, and to not be proud, and to always give honor to others, especially the saints, you know. This is the formula for successful chanting. If you chant in that mood, calling to Krishna, you know, I'll give you a couple of verses that embody this mood. One is this one by Madhavendra Puri. I like to quote it. Kama dinam kati nakatita palita duni deshas. Tesham jata mayna karuna natrapano pashanti hi. Putri jata nadi yodopate sampratam labna buddhis. Fama ayata kshadanam avayam mamna yung svatmadasi. In how many ways have I sought to obey the seductive demands of my wicked desires? Life after life. Seductive demands of my wicked desires. They show me no mercy, yet on I've gone shamelessly trying to quench lust's unquenchable fires. But now I'm rejecting these hellish desires, for my higher intelligence now has awoken. O Krishna, O shelter of fearlessness, please let me serve you with faith that will never be broken. So Krishna is the shelter of fearlessness. Sharanam abhayam is the word used. Sharanam abhayam. The fearless shelter. Now why is that? Because what causes fear in this world is our absorption in matter and material things. It's just like if you're on the ocean and you're in a boat, but that boat is leaking. And you take, you know, you say, oh, we got to go to the lifeboat. You know, you hit the iceberg, you go to the lifeboat. And the lifeboat is leaking. And you get into it, you know, you have one of the life preservers, but the life preserver is faulty. This is exactly what it's like in this world. We go from thing to thing to thing to try to get shelter, and there's no shelter. Ultimately, this body itself has to fall, and there's no shelter. There's no hope. It has to. You're defeated. Everything you work for, everything you think is important, all the relationships, your kids, your parents, your friends, everything, your money, your fame, it's all gone. It's taken away from you. Krishna says, Mrityu Savaharaschaham. As death for the atheist, I come and take everything away. You see? So isn't it better to take everything you have beforehand and give it to Krishna in love, in a personal way, so that when death comes, you're not seeing Krishna as death taking away, you're seeing him as a friend who's taking you back to God. See the difference? You can hang on to it, but you can't keep it. I'm sorry, you cannot keep it, anything. So it makes more sense to use this body and everything we have for Krishna's service to awaken that original love, so when final death comes for every one of us, as it will, then it's just a process of, just like Dhruva Maharaj. He put his foot on the head of death and climbed into the Vaikuntha airplane and took off and went home. Fourth canto, back to God, read it. So it's like that. You know, we can make the choice. So this verse is very, very nice, spoken by Madhavendra Puri, is that we've been trying to serve these masters, our material desires, our anger, our greed, fear. You have to serve, you have to terrorize, you have to run, you have to do it. These are all masters, you know, but they're not kind masters, they're slave drivers. They're never satisfied. You know, the greed is never satisfied, the lust is never satisfied. So by his intelligence awakening, by sadhu sangha, by reading Bhagavad Gita, he said, now I'm rejecting. I'm not going to say yes to these masters anymore. But you have to serve somebody. So therefore he runs to Krishna, please let me serve you. And if we serve Krishna, then these other things diminish, and no more. No more anger, no more fear, no more lust. Those masters give us up. But we have to accept the master, and that's Krishna. Okay, it's now 8:12. Any questions on this verse? Otherwise, I'll give you one more poem. How to chant Hare Krishna. Some of you heard this before, but like the Hare Krishna mantra, it's ever fresh. Manasaja pani dushte, labda batosmi dushte, timada gahana rupe, hanta sangsara kupe, ajita nikala daksha heta mundara daksha mubanayama mahaste bhakti rajum namaste. fallen in this deep and dark and dirty well of Maya, threatened by the snake of lust, whose venom burns like fire. Helplessly I pray, O Lord, whose strength is ne'er in doubt, place the rope of bhakti in my hands and pull me out. Now, this is very illustrative, because just imagine, you know, just visualize the reality, really, that we're in this deep well of illusion, and, you know, we're helpless here. And Krishna's there, you know, waiting to help us come out. So the rope of bhakti comes down. What is that rope of bhakti? The holy name, the instructions, spiritual master, the knowledge, the practices. It's all, that's the rope of bhakti. We have to hang on to the rope. If we don't hang on tight to that rope, Krishna can't do anything. He can do everything, but he can't force us. He will not force us back to guide it. Because with force, there's no love. Prabhupada said, Krishna doesn't want you to love him at the point of a revolver. This is a direct quote from Prabhupada. You can't force anyone to love you. You may force him to serve you, but you can't force him to love you. So Krishna is giving us the rope, but we have to hang on to it. It means we have to practice nicely. We have to be determined to practice this process nicely. And then we'll be saved. Hare Krishna. Any final comments or questions? All glories to Srila Prabhupada.